Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Where are the Skittles you've been talking about for the last 2 weeks?
Upstairs, apparently.
I want you to know that after listening to both of your podcasts, I bought Skittles on the way down to sailing yesterday. Dustin talking about Skittles for the last 2 weeks.
All right, here we go. Hey, guys. Welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my guest co-host this week, Sean Porter.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, man?
Not much.
All right, here we go. If a cluttered desk is a sign of a cluttered mind, of what then is an empty desk a sign of? So that was inspired by our conversations that we've been having recently about like messy shops and how do you deal with that? And if it's a good thing or a bad thing, or maybe not one or the other, maybe it's somewhere in between.
Yeah. And I recently, relatively recently, entirely reorganized my shop based off of one of your podcasts where you talk about shop organization and like how your ideal organization would be, and I shifted my storage unit from the back corner of my shop to the front side of my shop so that right. I could more easily get to those things. But it drastically changed how the shop flowed and like where my tools were, and I'm still getting used to a lot of that. And I've found since then that my shop is far more often cluttered than not, because I want the things that used to be hanging on my wall in front of my bench at hand, and they're not anymore. And so it's like just everything is sitting out, and it just bothers me nonstop. I'm like, I need to find somewhere for this stuff to go.
Yeah, because previously you had your main workbench up against a wall, which gave you the ability to put on that wall a pegboard and have all your tools, or to organize the wall with all the tools and stuff on it.
Right.
And so moving it out in the middle potentially gives you access to both sides of it, but then that tool wall is now across the room instead of being right there with your bench.
And then because the tool wall is towards the end of the storage rack,
right,
when I put a 15-foot section of stuff on the storage rack, it's now sitting in front of the tool wall, and it's 3 feet away but in front of, and I can't get behind it or around it. Like I can't even reach my tool wall anymore. Like stuff's got to get cut shorter just so I can get to the tool wall and access things.
I wonder how you could change or fix that. Like, I guess you could put more stuff behind you, like behind the drill press section. So your whole drill press and your large bench vise and stuff is behind you now. It's in the same spot it was, but now it's closer to your main workbench. Do you have any more room on that wall there to put up more pegboard and hooks and stuff?
I don't particularly enjoy pegboard because my pegs always fall out every time I take anything off of it.
That's 100% true.
In an ideal world, and it's mostly just a lack of energy and time, I would just take the tool wall down and move that board, because I have my garage is bare studs. So when I set up my tool wall initially, I put a 4x8 piece of OSB on the wall, and then I'm just hanging stuff wherever it was convenient on the wall.
Yeah, putting a screw in and out, just changing it as you go.
Yeah, and so ideally, I would take all the tools off, take the board off, and move it back into the corner where the storage rack used to be. Because right now, there's just a table there, and I only ever plan on there being a table there And so then I could access the tools again because that wall is bare now instead of having the storage rack in front of it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's just a lot of work to
put
the tools somewhere, take it all off the wall, move everything over, put everything back up.
I wonder if you could make that into like a chop saw station.
Well, that was the initial goal, was that that area would have a small bench for my chop saw, particularly in line or at the same level as one of the storage racks, so that long stuff could just feed in and get cut.
That space. Okay. Yeah. I
just haven't gotten around to it, and there's still like, it's a garage shop. You're familiar. It's small.
It's always changing. Yeah.
It's always changing. There's always too many tools in the shop for what's in there. So like things are on wheels and shoved in a corner, and it serves multiple purposes. So there's a four wheeler that's stored in there,
and all the accoutrement that go with that. Right.
Yeah. Four wheeler. Yeah.
That's kind of the other thing that I was thinking when I looked for this quote was like, if your shop's always like really clean and you only do one job in there, like that's, I don't know. I mean, I think being a hobbyist and a person that likes to do lots of different things, we end up having multiple interests. And so the shops change all the time. You know, you have currently your four wheeler has a spot in your shop, but then you also have the stuff to go with it. So like the plow it might be annoying, but it's also like a part of life, right? It's just another thing you're doing in your shop. Like you have the space to do it.
Right.
So like it's taken up some space that may, you know, in the moment when it's there, might be annoying because you want to use it for that space or something else. But again, it's just the fact that you have that space to do what you want. Like, you know, right now behind me is my bench, and Sean and I are recording together in the shop here at the Art of Craftsmanship shop in my basement. And the bench is completely full of stuff, but then I have my middle table in the middle, which is what I usually keep clean as possible. Or this is kind of where the current projects happen.
Right.
So like what's behind me can be like a rotating kind of mess of things, and it'll clean up. And then obviously when we're filming in here all the time, it cleans up. But I was thinking that. And you have any guesses at who that quote may have been by?
You know, I'm always really impressed that you have any idea who says particular quotes when Devin comes up with them, because I'm so awful at it.
Like, I'll give you a clue. He's a genius.
Is that an Albert Einstein quote?
It is. Yeah. So yeah, if a cluttered desk is a sign of a cluttered mind, of what then is an empty desk a sign? There's a picture of him sitting in front of his like cluttered desk.
God, it's funny because
I looked up quotes for cleanliness, shop cleanliness. That's kind of what I found that one. I was like, that's perfect. That's exactly what I want. It's not a quote about having a clean shop, you know, like cleanliness is next to godliness, but it's a sign of what you're doing. Like if you're cluttered, if you have a cluttered mind and then you have a shop that has nothing on it, then do you have a blank mind? Or, you know, it's like, is it never moving? So
right.
I think having that like rotating stuff, always stuff, something happening, it shows that there's something happening. It's like my classroom at school. I like try to actively keep students' work out and up on walls and on desks and things. Like we have all the desks are clean at the end of the day. My board is clean. Like my desk up the front with my computer and stuff, that's clean. But then there's just stuff. Like I want to have that room feel like an active workshop.
Right.
You know, it's an active studio. So that's half of that, like that mindset of keeping some things out that inspire you.
That was one of my favorite things about starting the YouTube channel, was it forced me to clean my shop, because there's nothing worse in my mind than trying to start a YouTube video with your shop being a mess. Like if you're shoving stuff out of the way, it just doesn't send a clean picture. It doesn't send the idea that you're organized or that you have any idea what you're doing. And for whatever reason, I recently partnered with a videographer, and as is with the way of things, immediately after we partnered, both of our lives just got excessively busy for no reason.
Of course.
And so we got the first video done, which was just swapping out or putting in the forward and reverse switch on my VFD.
Right.
And then we filmed the second one, which is a knife build. And then it's been a month since then. And he hasn't even been able to finish editing it. Right. And like we haven't been able to get back together. And it's just... because of that, it's been, you know, a month since I've filmed anything. My shop is a disaster. Just things are everywhere. I'm just getting used to it still. And I got, you mentioned that garage sale a couple weeks ago.
yeah.
on the podcast. And I got garage, so. I got a number of nice big tools that take up space and needed new places to go and required more reorganization in the shop. Right. It's like, well, got to figure out how this is all going to flow again.
Yeah, and you recently got an Atlas mill, a metal lathe.
Yep.
Which is pretty awesome, but that's another thing that needs a permanent home. That's not like a chop saw or a planer that can move around. That's, you know, weighs whatever 300, 400 pounds
right.
just on its own, not including the base. So,
well, you know exactly how much that weighs.
Yeah, I know. We moved into your shop.
That was one of the fortunate things where even before I did my reorg, there was a nice, almost perfectly sized spot in front of a window. I had a plug next to it that functioned well. And I was like, perfect.
Which is not always the case in your shop.
No.
Like a plug where you want it.
Well, yeah.
That's not the case in anyone's shop unless you make your own shop, right? Then you put plugs everywhere.
Yeah, actually, to fix that issue. So my garage is a two-car garage. It has two doors. And then the entire garage had a single 15-amp circuit powering the whole thing when I started using it. And nice. I would, like, my air compressor kicks on and the lights in the kitchen dim. So it's also on the same circuit as the lights in the kitchen. I'm like, oh my God, this is awful. And so I ran 220 amp out to my shop for the grinder when I did that. And then striped 5 20-amp plugs off of that 220 volt for 110 to the rest of my shop and spread it around. So I at least have that on right. all sides of my shop that can at least provide power for stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing also about that is that you know electricity. Like, mm-hmm. you've run a lot of electric in your houses that you've done over the years, and you've done all that stuff. So, you know, you look at it and see, like, holy shit, like, this is, I can't do anything with this, right? I'm going to kill all the power in the house, or at least everything that's hooked to this one circuit. In my mind, I'd be like, all right, well, that's one plug going in. Let me stripe off of that. Make, you know, like, I don't know. You know, obviously, I know that, like, when I try to run one thing and I try to run another thing at the same time, like, and it trips the breaker, then I know, obviously, I'm using too much power. But in the grand scheme of things, it's like, if I can get multiple plugs, and as a single person in the shop, I'm not ever really using more than one tool at a time, so right. it was never really an issue. But you did help me put in extra plugs in here, which is really nice, because then I just have more plugs.
Yes.
And they're on a dedicated circuit, which is just for themselves, which is cool too. So that is nice, because I have, like, grinders that pull a lot, and then whenever I'm running especially my smaller grinder, what I do wood on, I always have, like, a light attached to it and then lights around it so I can get plenty of light and a shop vac on at the same time. So I'm pulling, like, shop vac and grinder and lights, right. you know, so it's nice to have a dedicated circuit, because I've done that combination of things in the past and it has tripped the breaker, mm-hmm. which was a extension cord running from the window from my daughter's bedroom above us here in the shop out the window along the shop door and then down to the basement and run it off of a power strip in the basement.
I'm sure that's to code.
yeah it worked for years and it still actually works for part of what I'm powering in the shop, but yeah. So how's YouTube stuff been going since we last talked to you? I know it's been, I think we had you on episode like 3 or 4 of the podcast. It was pretty early on. We're at episode 60 now. So it would have been in the beginning of July or June that we started in 2020. So it's been over a year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I had a newborn at the time and yeah. that kid is a year and a half now and going through a whole new set of sleep regressions where I'm not sleeping anymore.
Fun stuff.
He just started that like 2 days ago.
Oh, no.
Where he's waking up multiple times. Like today, he just didn't nap. Usually my kid, I can put him down wide awake. Like I just go in, sing him a song for 30 seconds, put him down. He's out for 2 to 4 hours.
Right, in the middle of the day. Yeah, nap.
And then yesterday, Kate had to go in twice. And then today, we both went in half a dozen times, mm-hmm. and he just didn't nap, and that's an awful way to spend an afternoon.
Maybe he's just coming out of that, like, midday. I mean, that's pretty, but midday naps go up until you're a couple years old.
Yeah,
three,
no,
four,
it's, supposedly
know.
There is an 18-month sleep regression, and from what I read in 5 minutes right before I left, he's hitting all of that right now.
I will say that I think you guys have been relatively spoiled with his, like, how well he sleeps.
Oh, definitely.
For the last however many months, you know, like the last year, you know, getting like almost good multiple hour naps in the middle of the day and then sleeping all through the night.
Yeah.
Like, has he been waking up at night or just during the day?
Last night he started waking up at night. I think he was up 2 or 3 times last night, and I think once the night before.
That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's loads of fun. But yeah, you're right. We have been totally spoiled. Up until this, you know, we put him down. He sleeps for 2 to 4 hours in the middle of the day. We put him down at 6:30 at night, and he wakes up between 6:30 and 7:30 in the morning. Like, couldn't ask for anything better. His only one thing was that he refuses to sleep in a room with other people.
Oh, yeah.
So if we're ever in a situation where we try to travel, and like, you remember when we were up in New Jersey, we had him in the room with us that first night. He sleeps fine until we enter the room. And then he's like, oh, hey, everybody's awake. I'm going to talk to you loudly. Wake up the whole house.
And be really cute about it. Yeah. Like, hi mommy, hi daddy.
If you tell me to be quiet and try to put me back to sleep, I'm going to scream my face off.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's annoying. But I guess maybe that's a product of the quarantine, right? Just like, because for so long it was, you know, there's minimal amount of additional people other than our like quarantine bubble. And, you know, not a ton of sound around him in that sleeping time. So
maybe
that's one of those things that when our daughter was around that age, we would like, when people would come over in the evening and she'd be sleeping, they were like, oh, let's be quiet. I'm like, no, don't be quiet. We'll be normal. You know, she, like, we want to kind of train her to be able to sleep through normal conversation in the next room. Obviously, if, like, you know, we're not yelling cause she's asleep and she's a baby, we don't really want her to wake her up, but we also want her to be, you know, used to sleeping around some noise in the background and not freaking out and waking up and, you know, having to go in and get her every time. So.
Well, now she sleeps like a log, right?
She does. You know.
So, success.
12 years old, yeah. Yeah. So, let's see. I'm trying to think. What videos have you been... So, you're doing some four-wheel videos for the channel. So, Sean's YouTube channel is called Crafting a Life I Want. So, you can check him out there. And also, same thing on Instagram, right? At Crafting a Life I Want. Is it underscores or anything?
No, it's just Crafting a Life I Want.
Word? Yep. Okay. It always makes it easier.
Nice. It used to be dots, and that was really annoying. I think it was still dots when I was on the first Crafting episode. I was like, this is dumb. Life. I'm changing this. No dots.
Yeah, I had that thought too when I made ours, and it was like The Art of Craftsmanship and all one word. And I was like, should I space that out? And I was like, and then I remember, like, it's funny, I actually specifically remember thinking about that and then thinking of Knife Talk Podcast and Jeff when he tries to say Chris Cash's Instagram handle, which is at Mount Philip Metalworks, but it's like Mount_Philip_Metal_Works_ something like that. So, and he always says it, and Jeff always like bitches about how it's like really annoying to say. So I was like, The Art of Craftsmanship, all one word, just nice and easy.
I don't know. I think I just thought it wouldn't be available
right
when I did it. So I put dots in that to separate out the words. And turns out I didn't have to do that. So,
and you could just change that without like,
yeah,
on the same account, you can just change your name.
Yep, I just changed my name, and as long as it's available still, they don't particularly care. Yeah.
I guess, what's his name? The engraver, hand engraver. He changed his name, his Instagram name recently to The Hand Engraver. I'm trying to think of...
Don't remember what it used to be?
No, I can't remember his actual name. Evan Watson, sorry. Right. It used to be... Watson, it used to be like Evan Williams or something. It was something different, but it was like his company name, which is still his company as like Hand Engraver, but he changed it from that to The Hand Engraver on Instagram.
Right.
And I remember thinking of that too, like when he changed it, I was like, oh, like all of his followers are still there. Like, it's not like starting a new account, it's just changing your name.
Right. You're not trying to get all your followers to move over to a new account.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my YouTube channel, I thought about doing a series on the four-wheeler, and I was around 950 subscribers when we got the four-wheeler, and I did the winch installation on it, and I'm pretty sure that it was far enough outside the realm of what my subscribers wanted to see that I lost more subscribers than I gained.
That sucks.
And so I decided to put kind of a kibosh on doing more of those videos. I was like, you know, I don't want to push that, because this is also... right as I was in communication with my videographer, whose name is Neil. And I was like, I don't want to do anything like that. I like to get more interesting videos that are a higher quality. And so I did a test video, which was the VFD switch, the forward reverse on that. And that went really well. We both learned a lot because he hadn't done YouTube videos before. And oh, so nice. We were just kind of feeling each other out, getting to know each other. And then we did, it's not out yet, but we did a small kind of full metal EDC knife where I tried out some new techniques, new finishes on the handle. And
that's the one you said you finished like a month ago. And yeah. And everyone's like super busy.
Yeah. Well, and he got he got half of it done, and he posted it on, or he uploaded it to YouTube so I could take a look at it and kind of review what he had done and give some opinions on it. And keep waiting for the second half to come out. But yeah, you know, my life is busy as well. We were supposed to film, I think it was last Tuesday, maybe 2 weeks ago Tuesday. Right. And my shop was a mess. I wasn't prepared. I was like, I don't want you to come over and me be unprepared. Like, I don't want to waste your time. And so I haven't. My shop's still not clean.
It's so like, you can't use that as a thing. You got to say, come on over. And then you have to take that like 20 minutes before he gets there to run around like a madman and clean your shop.
Yeah, but that's the or problem. At least somewhat. It's not 20 minutes. I spent 20 minutes cleaning my shop and it's still a pigsty, man. Well,
yeah, but you spent 20 like casual minutes cleaning your shop, not 20 like I have to film in here in 20 minutes, which is what I do on most days that Devin comes over. I'm like, oh crap, I've got axes all over the place and there's sawdust everywhere and, you know. I got to make a little bit of space to film down here. But no, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. That's the whole thing, right? That's back to like a cluttered shop is a used shop, right? You're like using it. Actually, before you got here, I had like 10 axes on the count on the table because I'm doing a couple axe restorations and things for a friend of mine, which I'm not going to say on the podcast because I know he listens.
So it's not me.
For this guy, no, I'm not going to say who it is, but. But yeah, so I have some stuff I was doing. So I had a bunch of axes out, and I had that stuff that I got from the yard sale over the weekend out. And so I came down like, I guess around 8 or so, and I was like getting everything cleaned up and cleaned off and
shove it into a bucket.
Yeah, right. And then also setting up all the podcast gear and have it all, because I was like, it'd be cool if it was all like set up and ready to go when you get here, which was just perfect. Got it all just in time.
Yeah, I think my biggest problem was that I had done one more thing on the four-wheeler, which was I needed to wire the winch, and then I installed the bracket for the plow stuff. And so I pulled all of the other stuff down, the blade and then the poles that hold the blade, and it's sitting on my welding table, which I recently put together with that huge piece of steel we got.
Right.
And the next project that we're doing requires welding. And so, like, those things had to be put away, and, I mean, part of it's probably that I'm also hesitant about welding. Like, I'm inexperienced at welding.
Right.
The welder's still new to me. Like, I'm just trying to get to a place where that feels comfortable, and I'm not saying I'm an expert, but this particular project does not require expert welding. Right. And
yeah, I agree. That's one of those things, like, when you walk into your shop and you need to do something and you just feel confident, go and do it. I think that's the thing. Like my welder's there, you know, I got to do this, walk over and just weld it. Like when you're confident, you can do something like that in just a few minutes. And it's not a big deal. When you're like hesitant or if you don't have a ton of experience doing it, then it's like, okay, I got to get ready. I got to make sure I have all the right stuff on. Am I doing this right? There's like so many more things that go into it. I agree. Same thing. Like I have a welder down here and I have a bunch of little projects that I want to use that welder for. And it's just not one of those things that, in my mind, it's really quick, you know? Right. So it's like, I can't just, so because of that, those projects aren't even in my mind as like a possibility. Like they are, you know, I'm like, oh, I have this because I have a welder and I can do it, but it's not something where I come down and I'll just do it real quick. Like I would, if I had more confidence and more experience on the welder. Not that saying that, like, that's one of those other things, right? You need the experience to be able to then do that. So you got to do it. But all the things I want to do are things that I want to turn out well.
Right.
So it's not like I can just come down and like shit around with the welder on a project that I want to turn out well. I have to like actually come down and practice stuff and like practice, you know, making a bead and whatever. And we'll see.
That actually was part of my thought process with the shop redesign, is that I had my welder inside a closed cabinet, and then I had the line to the gas tank because mine's a MIG welder and I'm using non-flux core wire. It was awkward. It was all hidden. I had to like pull it out. Nothing was comfortable about it. And so I ended up moving that welder and I installed a shelf on the side of that same cabinet that fits the welder. And so now like it's out. it's easily connected. I can access the gas tank easily. There's less reason why I can't use it. And I'm hoping this next project will, I have to make two of them. Yeah. And I'm hoping it will help me get over that hump of like, all right, let's just go do it. Let's turn on the gas, get everything moving, get it plugged in, and just push forward with it. But gotta get there.
When you, it's a MIG slash, it could be used as flux core, right? If you just put flux core in it. Yep. Have you used this flux core, or you just used this MIG when you got it? Because I know you've used it a couple times.
I've only used it, I think, once. Oh, twice. I guess I did a test. But I had the tank, and I had,
so you just use it, right?
And I just bought
right away.
Yeah, like I had to rerun some wire anyways, because it had been pulled back in through the gun, and so I just pulled out the flux core stuff and put the MIG wire in.
Nice. Yeah, I the one that I got is a flux core, and I got it at a pawn shop, which, if you guys listening, don't ever go into pawn shops because you think they're skeezy, which is what I always did before I went into pawn shops. Now, anytime I see a pawn shop, I'm like, go into the pawn shop, because most pawn shops have so many awesome tools for so cheap, because people, that's what they can pawn, like a big thing that like you don't really, might not need this thing, but it's got some value to it. So like that little grinder, my 2x42, I got from a pawn shop.
I remember
the welder I got from a pawn shop, and a few other things. And so now whenever I see them, I kind of walk in and browse, you know, it's like an antique store or something. It's just like another thing to browse around and be like, ooh, this is kind of cool.
My welder came from a pawn shop too.
Exactly.
I used to have a Hobart 270. This is back when I lived in Baltimore before I moved to Seattle. Right. And I bought that because I had dreams. I had a Wrangler at the time, and I had dreams of making my own bumper and Jeep parts and things like that. And it moved to Seattle with me. The tank of gas actually lived in Dustin's garage for the subsequent years.
You're like, hey, you want a tank of gas? I was like, okay. You're like, I can't move it. So it's either that or sell it. I was like, all right. So yeah. Yeah. And then when you got your,
turns out you still had it when I got my welder. I was like, hey.
Like, yeah, you can have it back for a rental fee of $100 a month.
I was like, do I have to pay you for that time?
Yeah. No, that's the nice thing about living close by now, is that we both know that whatever we have in our shops is like tradable back and forth as much as it's needed.
I have dreams of one day building a duplex, and then with a big shop where we just share the shop, where we both have just a shop together. Right. Because then tools cost half as much.
Yep.
As long as the other person also wants it.
Yeah, that's like owning a boat with two other people, like I do. Owning a sailboat with my brother and our buddy Charles, that whenever we want to buy anything for the boat, it only costs a third of the price of what it normally costs, because you're only paying your third, which is really nice. Yeah. So I'm trying to think of what you, other things you've been working on your YouTube channel. So you're working on the four wheeler, and you got the four wheeler to take care of like yard stuff or drive stuff, because you guys have a long driveway, which is kind of steep, and you need it to like plow snow and all, which is just like a convenient tool that can also be utilized as a toy, which is fun.
Yeah. No kidding. More so than I even thought when I got it.
Yeah.
So,
and also I guess do firewood and stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you listen to my other episode, I talked about the tiny house a lot.
Right.
Yeah. And we have since moved out of the tiny house and are Airbnb-ing it. So like my wife and I, particularly since the pandemic, we both work from home. And the only reason we need to shovel our driveway is if it happens to be on a day that a tiny house guest is arriving at the Airbnb. And last year we had to shovel that driveway four or five times. And once it'd frozen so bad, we had to pay somebody to do it. And it was like a couple hundred bucks. I was like, no, not again. And then we also have the opportunity, like you said, we have a wood stove in the basement, and we live on 26 acres. So with labor, we could heat our house for mostly free. And that was how I pitched it to Kate. I was like, Kate's my wife. How I pitched to her is, we can plow the driveway whenever we need to.
Yeah.
We can gather wood from around the property and bring it back up. Like it will help us save money on oil costs, so we're not using that to heat. And turns out it's really fun to just go exploring the property on a four-wheeler.
Yes, it is. That's awesome. And yeah, I know you got like a a skidding, what's that called, like a nose or whatever.
Yeah, I got a skidding cone.
Skidding cone.
Where, yeah, like you wrap a chain around the log, and then you pull it through the nose of the skidding cone, so it just keeps it from getting hung up on stuff.
Right. So it's got like a point at the end, like a rocket.
Yeah. And I'm not entirely convinced it was worth the cost. Like, turns out I can just drag stuff with the four-wheeler without the cone, but you know, live and learn.
Yeah. No, I think that, you know, I mean, if nothing else, it keeps your property from getting cut up by like dragging stuff around. Now, most of your property is wooded, so it doesn't really matter, but
right.
You know, I think it's nice to have, and it keeps things looking nice and keeps your wood from like just dragging through dirt, at least on the front, you know.
That was the biggest
rocks and stuff.
Biggest thing is it was like cost between nothing and I can't remember the name, but it a log hauler, where it's like a trailer that lifts up the front end of the log,
right, yeah,
while you drag it out of the woods. And the whole point is to keep the log from picking up as much dirt as possible, so that you're not dulling your chainsaw blades when you're, you know, bucking it to length. Your electric saw, your electric axe, gas axe. There we go, gas axe.
I have an electric axe and a gas axe down here. Yeah, but yeah, nice. I think that's fun. I've been the benefactor of the, or not benefactor, beneficiary of the fun of the four-wheeler multiple times now. It's been awesome. I've always, like, I've tried to convince Nicole, my wife, a dozen times or more that it would be fun to take like a four-wheeler backpacking trip, and she's like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, come on, how fun would that be? You know, we don't have to walk, we can go like, you know, 100 miles in like 5 days or something or whatever. And
it's like a modern day horse.
Exactly, right. I mean, now that would be awesome, doing like a horse backpack. I think we've talked about that
We
looked into it.
I've been talking about it for ages. Yeah. The problem is my birthday's in December, and Kate's like, no. Even last year for Kate's birthday, I was like, would you want to try to do a horse camping trip? And she's like, no.
Oh, man.
Well, granted, awesome. She was also like 1 month postpartum last year for her birthday. She was like, no. But it's just not her thing.
Yeah, right. Oh, that'd be so much fun. That'd be awesome. But yeah, so I've tried, you know, and if we lived in an area that was colder, like we could do snowmobiling and things like that. But it has been nice to be able to come over and like play around and ride around the property on the four wheeler and stuff that you have, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't often think of it. And you come over, we're just hanging out, and you're like, hey, can I take the four wheeler for a spin? I'm like, well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm like, sweet. Because I love, like, with the four wheeler, I love exploring, and then I love the like four-wheel capability. I love finding my way, like, not fast but slow through like areas and around trees and over logs and stuff, and seeing what's like reasonable to go over and what I can go uphill as a down and work my way around. I think that's just like fun to be able to explore around without having to walk. Like, just being on something that has so much power underneath you. It's such a cool feeling.
Oh, know? Man, the spider webs lately have been awful. Yeah. So Dustin comes back. We have a half-mile loop in our property, and I had gone on the loop before people had come over to clear the spider webs. I didn't think about the fact that Dustin would go off-trail and go exploring, yeah, which, you know, he just does. But he comes back with this huge branch in his hand, just, like, hang out in front of him, like, you went off-trail, didn't you?
Yeah.
Spider webs got you in the
After
face.
After I got, like, four, like, giant spider webs, and, like, so strong, they like hit me, and I'm like, there's gonna be a spider on my face.
They're awful. It. Every day, I'm trying to instill new habits in my life, and to that end, I looked up, because I'm a nerd, I looked up how long it takes to form a habit, and apparently the answer is somewhere between like 2 weeks and a year,
right.
Where the mean is somewhere around 66 days. I was like, all right, a goal, 66 days, I will do something every day for 66 days. And that something includes a walk, usually with my infant on my back. My infant's a relative word, kid weighs 30 pounds now.
Right.
And so that half-mile walk is along the property, and I walk it every day.
Right.
Every single day, there are like dozens of spider webs on that trail. And so I have a pile of sticks accumulating on one side of the trail, because I'm just like, all right, just waving a stick.
Your spider web stick, yeah,
the whole
exactly.
way through. And they still get me. I'm like, yeah. God, why are there still four spiders on me?
Anyone listening who's like a backpacker or walks through the woods knows that. You know, like, you know, you're always looking for a good spider web stick, because you're just going to walk and swing it around in front of you while you're walking.
Our most recent guest in the tiny house, I was going out for my daily walk with Alistair and I had a stick in my hand and I noticed there weren't any spider webs. And we got to a place where there's a pretty tight cutback. And I saw our tiny house guests were on the trail ahead of me, far enough that like we weren't bothering each other and I didn't see them. I get up at the end and I see he's got a stick in his hand. I'm like, ah, the spider web's got you.
Nice.
He's like, yeah, yep. I'm kind of used to it. I knew ahead of time I needed to get a stick to clear him away.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's one of those things that I actually usually use one hiking pole when I go backpacking. So that's always like hiking and flipping it up in the air to like, especially going through any like tight, narrow spots. You're like, all right, spider web stick. Yeah. Speaking of being in the woods, I know you just started this year hunting
for the
first time. So I know you were out like on opening day and this is for bow hunting, in Maryland, I guess. Is that like in the country? Is it the same or is it depends on where we are? I don't know.
It depends a little bit. From what I've seen,
I guess you're right. Of course.
Somebody I went to college with and ran track with in college, he is an avid hunter, like on Game of Inches TV regularly, travels around the country doing hunts, and he was out hunting the same day I was for opening day in another state. So I don't know if it's the same across the board, but it seems to be relatively the same.
But it's like, but I guess it's the specific season in Maryland. Is that what you're going by for Maryland?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So archery season started last Friday was opening day for archery season. And that includes, you know, your traditional bows, compound bows and crossbows.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm fortunate enough to have friends that loaned me crossbows off and on. And nice. So I was able to get out a couple of times. My first day out, I didn't see anything. I figured out exactly how uncomfortable a tree stand can be.
Yeah.
But I was in my stand by 5:15. Sun comes up around 6:20, and you can shoot about a half an hour before that.
Okay.
Didn't see a thing for the entire time. Mm-hmm. I climbed from the stand, walked down in my driveway, and I see a deer over in the other field. God dang it. Then I got up there, I don't know, 2 or 3 days later, I was up in the stand again and had a deer hanging out almost the entire time it was light. Like she showed up before light and was just facing straight away from me. And so I didn't have a shot.
Right.
And I have a feeder up. And the feeder went off at 6:30 and it spooked her.
Oh,
and
man.
So she just bolted. And she bolted probably about 20 or 30 yards. And I saw her at the edge of this clearing that I'm posted up in. And she hung out there. And then she actually came back. But then she was straight head on to the point that she was directly beneath me. And I was like, and she wasn't really big.
Right.
She was by herself. She was maybe 70 or 80 pounds. So like I've never killed a deer before.
Right. So it's your first one.
So my first one, I was like, I didn't feel really comfortable.
Right,
like my first one, it will most likely be a broadside shot that I'm very confident that it'll hit exactly where I want it to hit. And there's no question about it.
Because like if it was the perfect deer, like a big old female or something, or like a big buck or something, you might have like maybe taken the risk. But being at your first and also not an ideal deer, like without having that broadside shot that you know is going to be a good kill, it's like
and then she turned and walked away from my tree and like turned broadside but behind, like I looked at it and she was just behind enough branches. I'm like, I don't feel comfortable, like I'm just not gonna on this one. I'll have other chances. Archery season's long.
But that's good. That's promising, right? That you know that they'll move around in that area, that you're in a spot that they move in. That's good.
Yeah. And the first day, I kind of knew nothing was going to be there. I'd only gotten the feeder up at like 4 o'clock the day before. I ended up getting a trail cam a couple days later and got that set up. So I know I've had five deer, including two big does, at my feeder at 6:30 in the morning and at 5:30, 6 o'clock at night, and just haven't had them there when I'm there. So apparently I'm smelly and they pick it up. But
so you're doing crossbow. If you guys don't know, if you listen regularly, you know that I'm a bow maker and Sean is also a bow maker. So Sean and I think we talked about this in the last podcast, but we took a bow making class together. And that's when we first learned bows. And actually, technically, we started learning before that because we decided to take the class. And then before we took the class, we were like so excited. So then we started making bows before the class. Yep. We were like, let's just build something right away.
Actually, I think they're still up. I think they're still up above
yeah,
us in here.
This is, yeah, that's the one that I made right there with the electrical tape on one side holding a crack together.
I don't think mine made it.
Yeah.
Because I think I pulled it too soon and it developed a pretty significant set and it was only like a 25 or 30 pound bow.
Yeah,
but
this one's so light and
But it shot an arrow.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't know anything.
Yeah.
So
from the amount of, you know, whatever we could find online, which was probably videos by Clay Hayes.
It was.
Which is, you know, we've had on the podcast.
He was wearing like an orange hat in his like little barn that he had. Yeah. And when I saw him on... I looked him up again when you had him on the channel a couple months ago, and I didn't even recognize him. Like, he just looked so different. Then I scrolled back and was like, that is the guy that taught me how to make bows.
Right, exactly. Yes, specifically Osage, because he has some awesome videos on Osage. And when I reached out to him and he agreed to be on the podcast, it was like meeting, you know, some awesome famous person, because I had watched so many of his videos and learned so much about bow making from him. So I was like, oh, he's actually going to be on the podcast? That's who. I know we had all sorts of technical difficulties getting him on, which eventually worked out fine. But, and then it's funny because we actually didn't talk at all about him being on Alone, which he won the 8th season of Alone. I don't know if that's spoiler alert for anybody, but it's already happened on TV.
Spoiler alert, it's already happened.
It's already happened.
I wasn't sure if you even
talked
knew
about
yet.
It. Yeah. I mean, he's talked about it on his YouTube channel. He's put up a bunch of videos.
Yeah.
Each week he was posting videos about it. But, so when we had him on as a guest, it had already happened, but it wasn't out yet. Like, he wasn't talking about it. So I had no idea.
Right.
Until
right.
like a few weeks later, and he was like, you know, so, you know, he posted a video about how he was on Alone and how it was like the most real reality show that there is out there, because it's really real. You know, it's just they drop. Excuse me. Drinking beers over here. They drop them off and they got their camera gear and that's it. Like, they're alone. They just have to survive as long as possible. So it's as real as can be. The nice thing I think about him, and I think there have been some other people over the seasons who are content creators who do that type of thing or teach it. Him, his primary job being like an outdoor naturalist and a content creator, he's always thinking about those like angles and stuff. So he filmed himself like that. So there was tons of great footage that he set up, you know, like different angles of things, different cameras, because he's just got that mindset because he's used to filming himself.
Have you watched it yet?
I've seen a couple. I saw like the first two episodes actually when I was up visiting my in-laws Christmas. I forget when that was. Spring break, something like that. I forget. Maybe. No. I'm like going back lots and lots of times. This would have been mid-July or early July when we went up to visit. The first couple episodes were out on Discovery Channel or whatever it was that it's on. And so I think I watched like the first two episodes.
Okay.
But I haven't watched the other ones, and I actually haven't watched any of his videos about them because I want to at least I didn't watch any of his videos because I didn't want a spoiler if he had like won or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he posted his last video and stuff on Instagram about like it had showed the last episode and he won and whatnot. And so then I like sent him some messages and I was talking to him about it and all, but I didn't want to watch those videos beforehand because I was like, well, what if I get a chance to watch it? Then I'm not going to, like, I don't want the spoiler, you know? So
when he was season 8, and when season 8 was coming out, or before season 8 came out, it was after he was on your podcast. I was like, oh, somebody I vaguely know is going to be on Alone. And so Kate and I actually started watching it because all of the episodes are available to stream with my account.
Right.
Which I've given you. You should watch it. Anyways, it's the History Channel, not Discovery. Anyways,
right. Okay, yeah.
We had watched like season 1, season 2, season 4 or 5, and then we were recording season 8 and just started interspersing it in there. And even Kate was like, man, Clay Hayes knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He knows how to set up shots. He understands like what he's doing as far as talking to the camera. He seems to genuinely know what he's doing.
Yeah, right.
And it was just, he was a joy to watch. And like some of those people are, and not specifically on season 8, on previous seasons, they just kind of come across as awful humans.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't really want to watch you.
Right. Exactly.
Well, yeah, Clay was great. I'm really happy for him. I hope it is a path for,
right.
You know, whatever he wants to do with his life. Like $500,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's crazy. I actually started watching, I forget what it's on. I guess it's on Netflix. Season 7 is on Netflix, which is the $1 million. Like, if they had to survive in the Arctic for 100 days.
I haven't watched that one yet.
So I started watching that. I think I'm on, like, episode 3 or something. Just, I was actually at school, like, a week ago, and I was in the middle of my planning period, and I had all of my planning done. Like, everything was done the day before, so I was, like, sitting there and kind of half falling asleep, like, doing, like, reading emails, and then I was like, all right, let me look through, like, and I was like, what's on Netflix? So I was like, hey, look, there's a season of Alone on Netflix, and it was the 7th season, so I started watching it. You know, hey, you gotta use your planning period somehow, right? But, yeah. So you've been using crossbow. That's, yep, like, what you're hunting with.
Yeah.
Why not longbow? Because that's why I got in this conversation. It's like,
right,
bow makers, and we've shot a ton.
And that's always been together. That's always been kind of like the full circle, you know, dream for me is,
right,
you know, you pulled down a tree, split out the limbs, made a bow from it. To be able to take a deer with that bow would just kind of like be what exactly I would want it to be.
Right.
And there's a couple things keeping me from hunting with my longbow right now. And one of which is the weight feels a little low to me.
Okay.
Like, I would have to be, because the weight of, I only have one bow, and the weight is probably between 45 and 50 pounds.
Right.
And the accuracy I would have to have, like, it'd have to be a near perfect shot. Like, it's at 45 to 50 pounds, I'm not going through a shoulder blade to hit anything. So quartering towards would be rough. It'd need to be a broadside, and I'd have to be able to hit, you know, 6-inch circle from 10 to 20 yards. And I don't have that confidence.
Right. Okay.
And like, I can probably do it, but you and I have shot enough up at Oregon Ridge. It's like, there's always that every third shot that just misses the target entirely. And I'm like, going on?
Yeah, what was that one about? Yeah. Yeah. You hit like 8 inches up to the right and you're like, what is that? Like,
yeah, and it's
that,
like the previous one hit, you know, 2 inches from where I was aiming, and the next one goes 7 inches, 8 inches away.
Yeah, right,
and I'm like, come
right
on. And so it's that lack of consistency, not to mention when you are hunting, it's not like you've just gone and shot 3, 4, 5 arrows and you're feeling warmed up and comfortable. It's you're cold.
Yeah,
you've been sitting there for anywhere from an hour to 2 to 3 hours.
Right.
And it's just a lack of confidence and a lack of accuracy on it. Like,
Literally, the first time I picked
up a crossbow, it was Brian's crossbow. So nothing I have ever shot in my life. I was shooting from, I think it was 10 yards, and I hit a 1/2 inch from where I was aiming.
Right.
And then I moved to 20 yards, and I hit a 1/2 inch from where I was aiming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, my first two shots,
that's
like, okay.
They exist. Yeah, because
and even Brian was saying, like, he took one warm-up shot before he shot a deer with his crossbow.
Yeah.
And I'm like, great.
Yeah.
Like, that type of confidence is not something that I have with my longbow.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No criticism, because I also, you know, I don't hunt, not because I'm not interested in it. Half of it's because I don't need to hunt right now. You know, between my wife and I, we make enough money to live comfortably and I don't have to hunt. I would like to hunt because I feel like I think you were kind of getting at, it's almost like the full circle, right? We've made the bows, we've practiced them for years and years and years, thousands and thousands of shots. So we've shot tons and tons of targets. We've gone through the courses, you know, hundreds of times. And so that full circle comes around with, like, what's the point of that, right? Getting to the end is actually like hunting. Now, I think also for your perspective, you know, hunting for the first time, right? I feel like doing something for the first time, knowing that you'd be able to have a clean kill for their first kill, maybe the first year, first couple years, and then eventually, once you've gotten that, like, comfort level up with, like, hunting and what you need to do and what's a kill and what could be, you know, how far you could miss and still get a good kill, you know, or at least a relatively
humane
wounded enough
kill.
Exactly,
yeah,
that they're not going too far. So, you know, I understand completely, like, having that confidence of doing that and being it the first time, I'd want it to be something that's more of a sure kill, right? And humane. Yeah. So,
and that's, I had intended my first time to be with somebody else, as weird as that might sound. I've got a couple of friends, that have offered to take me hunting, and it just hasn't lined up. Like, Brian offered to take me hunting, and then they had some stuff come up where he wasn't even able to go out opening day,
right?
Because Liz was out of town. And My other friend, I got to contact him. His son got his first deer opening weekend, which was cool. And so I got to reach out to him and see what he wants to do, if he's still up for that. But it's also something like my neighbor hunts, and he actually loaned me, he had a bunch of extra stuff. So he's loaned me the sticks to climb up, the tree stand. Yeah. Also loaned me he loaned me a blind too, because he finds his tree stand really uncomfortable as well. And oh man, it's been a while since I've been that uncomfortable.
Right.
That's rough.
Voluntarily.
Right.
Or, like, you know, kind of, yeah, maybe it's, not voluntarily. But,
it's actually really interesting. I Googled what hunters do when they're sitting in their stand for hours. And, like, Brian sits on his phone, and I don't know if his stand is more comfortable or he's just more comfortable or what, but I didn't feel entirely comfortable having my phone out while I'm in my stand. like my chair is, you know, 6 inches wide by 10 inches wide by 6 inches deep. It's just not all that stable feeling when my butt's on it, particularly after an hour when it's asleep. Anyway, so I'm just sitting there with nothing but, like, listening to the woods wake up and my thoughts and all of that. And I mean, lately my brain's been going nonstop, like keeping me up at night going nonstop. And so being able to be in the quiet of the woods, and, you know, quiet's relative, but it's nice. And, like, I'm out there before it's light at all. It's pitch black. It's just, it's a different experience. And more than, like, obviously I haven't killed anything yet. I haven't done anything like that. It's just sitting and listening to the woods wake up. And even that day the deer came out, it was fun to, like, watch her in her natural habitat. And, you know, we see deer a lot when we're out, but they're almost always aware of us.
Right.
And so for her to be beneath me and not be aware of me, it was just really nice to watch. Even in, like, you know, she never presented a shot, wasn't ideal, all that fun stuff. But it's fun to kind of watch her moving through and eating and just being relatively relaxed.
Yeah, I was I was actually just listening to an older episode of The Blacksmith's Pub, which is a podcast with Jesse Savage and Rick something. I don't know Rick's last name off the top of my head. I was just looking for it, but he was talking about hunting and hunting with a bow, with a longbow, but that same thing, you know, just being out there and watching the animals and, like, whichever season he did it. I mean, this was back in, I was listening, I think it was from around before Thanksgiving or so last year in 2020. They were talking about it and just like the experiences he had with sitting out there and watching, like, a buck come in and walk up and not really present a good shot, but just to see it come up and be in that situation where they maybe have a feeling that you're there, but they're there and they just go on their way and they just live. And that's, I've had that type of thing over the years, not in, like, hunting situation, but just in a backpacking or traveling or camping and walking around in the woods. Because often here in Maryland, if you just walk out into the woods and you sit down for 10 or 15 minutes, a whitetail deer is going to come by because there's so many whitetail deer in Maryland. You know,
the bag limit is literally unlimited.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. For does in Maryland, it's unlimited. Right. Because there are so many. And so camping and stuff, my entire life, I've multiple times, especially when I was, like, in college, when I had more of, like, a hippie mindset and, like, a naturalist mindset. Now I still have that kind of mindset, but at least now it's kind of mixed with a lot of other things. But, you know, just kind of, like, barefoot, walk out into the woods, long hair, you know, just sit down next to a tree and then watch the world go by. I mean, that experience is so cool. And, like, I know Brian's talked about that with his, you know, his hunting last year, and now like, you have that same experience of just, and you may have had that before, but, like, there's something really, like, intense and natural about that, about just watching the world wake up around you or just watching things happen around you and knowing that, like, you're in a position of almost a position of power, right? Being a conscious kind of can make, like, decisions about what you want to do, you know, like, as opposed to the animals around you who are just living a life that's based off of, like, moving and eating and surviving, you know, like, you're looking at this thing and observing them with a mindset of being like, I want to see this thing live its life as a way to, you know, I don't know, just enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. Enjoy nature around us. And I think it's a pretty interesting thing. It's a pretty like mind opening experience when you have that and you can see these wild animals move around you, whether that's the deer in Maryland, which are relatively tame because there's so many, or if that's, you know, a squirrel, or if it's foxes or whatever, you know, it's just pretty interesting. I think that's why we're all also intrigued by like animal documentaries. That's why like Planet Earth, that whole documentary series that mm-hmm. came out when we were like in college or high school or whatever, like that was a huge like thing. Everyone loved it because it was so cool. We were getting so many beautiful shots of just animals living their lives, and it's just something pretty impressive.
Kate and I have a friend of a friend, Hayes is his name, but he is a videographer for National Geographic. Mm. I don't think specifically, but he does like, he recently was part of a project that won an Emmy for whales. Oh, like, nice. So he's out up in the, you know, out in Alaska and waters and stuff like that doing video. And some of the stuff that he posts is just phenomenal. And it's like that same concept of just seeing the animals and seeing all of that. It's like, I don't know, it always brings me back. Like the animal's entire purpose is to survive long enough to reproduce.
Right. Yeah.
All it is every day it's wake up, eat food, don't die.
Yeah.
Reproduce.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And sometimes in Western novels kind of do the same thing for me, but like I think about it and I go back to wondering what I would be like in that time.
Yeah.
Cause like that was human life back in, I don't know, thousands of years ago.
Yeah. Right.
And I always wonder like how I would perform in that time. I always think I would be good because then, you know, I consider myself relatively athletically gifted and coordinated and things like that. But, but yeah, you know, you never know.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's that, that's the mystique or that's the like allure of the, at why people love to watch post-apocalyptic movies and Westerns and things that are like, you
definitely
know, because you're like, oh, you like, as men, you know, we were like, could we test ourselves and be, you know, have that type of survival? Like, what do you have to do to survive? What do you have to do to like live out that? Could you be a leader? Would you be a follower? Like, what would your position be in the ranking? Like, it's a weird thing. And, you know, 99%, I'm 99% sure that that'll never happen. We'll never get into that situation, but you know, we can hope or not.
Depends on what direction you want to go with
that. Yeah, exactly.
Do I want to test this?
I like a couple years ago, you sent me a little like meme thing that was like, what was it? I don't have too many hobbies. I'm just collecting a robust post-apocalyptic skill set. It's like knife making, bow making, axes, you know, fire building, bushcrafting, like, you know, just in case something happens, I want to be ready.
Of course. Gotta have those skills just in case.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That's actually, you know, one of the things I like about the property I live on is it gives me an opportunity to utilize those things. Like,
right.
I use 4 axes regularly. And every one of those I picked up for less than $20 at a, I don't know, 2 of them probably came from the back of some guy's garage that we met on Facebook in the middle of nowhere. That was that guy up in like Thurmont, Maryland, where I got married, where he was like getting out of axes and like, okay.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, that guy. Yeah, we went up. Yeah.
That was like one of my first decent, you know, hauls of axes. I got like a nice great neck.
That's right, yeah.
Axe, that's my felling axe, right. And then
the giraffe logo.
Yes,
that's a good one.
Yeah, it turns out there's very little information on those other than the fact that they're good steel, but like just being able to use those on a regular basis and have a purpose where I'm gaining experience, because YouTube is fantastic. YouTube and the internet has given me the confidence to tackle so much. I redid a bathroom by myself. Tiling sucks.
But you were able to do it.
Right.
Because you were able to see someone else do it. Yeah.
And I learned how to make bows on, you know, started off on YouTube, but there's only so much that YouTube can teach you, and then experience takes over, and doing it and learning how to do stuff is huge. And like, I like to know things.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that I really like about YouTube, and I like as a YouTube content creator, is that I'm giving people the confidence to try, right? Because if you've never seen it or you've never done it, it's hard to just try for the first time. But if you see someone else do it, and then you're like, okay, well, that takes away from the like possible concern of I've never done it before. I've never seen it done before. I don't know what little problems I might run into. And that's what deters you from doing something. But if you see someone else do it and they're like, okay, this is what you want to do. You know, maybe try not to go this way because it's a little funky. If you do this way, go over this way, open up this thing first. You know, it'll keep you. It's just, it's like being in a classroom with someone who will give you those pointers that you don't necessarily know. And that's actually one of the things I think a lot of people encourage people to take classes with, because just YouTube doesn't give you that intimate, you know, kind of conversation where someone's like, oh, you're, you know, like with blacksmithing, you know, so something like that. Maybe you're not standing right or hitting weird, or you're like doing something you would never know or think to do different unless someone tells you. But I think what YouTube does, it gives people the confidence to try it.
Yeah.
And like you said, then you can build up the experience, right? You start with like, okay, I've seen this guy do it. He's kind of talked me through it. Let me try it. And then you try it, right? Once you do it once, then you've already done it once. And then it's like, it's not scary anymore. Then you can try it again and try it again. Then you learn on your way.
Yeah.
Obviously by that point, it might be good to then, if you really want to get on something, take a lesson from somebody so they can give you some hands-on experience, but at least you already have that under your belt.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah.
And there's certain things where, like, I want to put in the time to learn, and then there are other things where it's like, well, I understand the basics at this point. Do I really want to put in a ton of effort into learning how to do this, or do I want to pay somebody $600 and go take a class?
Right, yeah.
And welding is actually one of those things. Like, I know enough to make steel stick together.
Right.
I also know, like, I have followed enough people, particularly when I was active on the Jeep forums, that were taking welding classes while they were working on their Jeeps. Right, and
yeah.
I was like, there's so much here that I don't understand and don't know.
Right.
And don't have an interest in trying to figure out on my own. Like, I just want to get to a place where I can take a welding class.
Right, yeah.
And at least learn like, the reasoning behind the things that I vaguely know. And I don't know. There's a lot of classes I would love to take. And that's part of why I want the YouTube channel to succeed,
right,
is
yeah.
to just fund some of that. Because, like, I work a full-time job. I have family money. It's yeah. allotted for things. We budget for stuff. And the YouTube channel helps me budget for hobbies and
right.
things like that.
Yeah.
So I would love it to be a little more successful and make a little more money and
right.
help pay for classes just to increase my skills and get better at stuff without making 4,000 mistakes on YouTube that you all can
right, exactly.
you all can point out for me.
That
I do appreciate all of the feedback.
We'll just leave it at that. I like your face.
You're except
like...
that one comment that said just no. That wasn't constructive criticism.
Yeah, people love to hide behind their keyboards, you know. No face, no conversation. They can say whatever they want. You can comment back to them, but it doesn't matter. Yeah.
You've had several conversations on this podcast about bringing someone to your point of view.
Right. Yeah.
And like, you have people that are just like really negative in their comments and you're like, well, no. And I actually had a successful experience where like somebody was like, way to show a huge gap between, and this is the knife I made for you. They're like, way to show a huge gap between, I don't know, X and Y.
Right.
On the knife. It was my first hidden Tang knife. And I was like, what are you talking about? Are you talking about the gap that looks like it's there between the first brass piece and the piece of wood?
Right.
And they were like, yeah. I was like, that actually wasn't a gap. Like, what happened is I had to pry the handle apart because the glue failed the first time. And it dented the wood a little bit. And so when I glued it all back together, there was like an epoxy gap that was there. But it was
right.
only, you know, a fraction of an inch deep. And so right. it sanded away. I asked you to send me a picture of the handle
oh, yeah.
at some point just so I could verify, because I never took good pictures of it, because I was like, I'm done. I got to give it to Dustin. It's his birthday present. It's already like a month late.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, you're right. I'm like, can you go like delete your negative comment?
Yeah, right,
by
exactly.
I think no one's going to read the replies.
Yeah. You know, hey, but on YouTube, you know, the analytics don't care what the comment
no.
is.
No, they don't.
It's just a comment. So it's like,
And I got two or three more comments the next few days.
That's why, you know, some of the bigger YouTubers or whatever, if they're feeling spunky, will like pin those negative comments to the top. So then everyone who loves that YouTuber will just attack that person, like, tons of comments.
I hadn't heard of that particular.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that point of view, right? You just like pin a negative comment to the top and you just
get them, boys.
Yeah, exactly. You let your pack feed.
I need a bigger pack.
Yeah.
Well, crafting a life I want.
There you go. Yeah.
Go over there, subscribe.
Yeah, check it out.
I appreciate everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's one of the things. I actually had a guy recently, he reached out to me and he asked what tool I use to cut the grooves down the middle of my leather to make it fold easier. And so I just responded back to him. I said I use a linoleum cutting V grooving tool. So I know about linoleum cutting tools before I knew about leather cutting tools because I'm an artist. So I did linoleum cutting, you know, block printing in college and even in high school. But it's just a little V cutting tool that cuts a groove out an engraving tool, except for it's not, you know, it's not flat. It's a V. And so he commented, it's funny, I didn't see his comment, but he had commented back, something about like he wasn't sure exactly if that was the right thing because it wasn't really what he thought it was. It should be something with leather working. And then within like 5 minutes after that, he commented back again and was like, wait, nope, I'm wrong. You're right. I looked it up. That's 100% what it is. And I was like, all right, thanks. You know, glad I could help. But yeah, just like I knew what the tool was that he was, right. You know, and sometimes it does happen where someone will ask me a question and I'll answer it and they'll be like, it won't be exactly what they were trying to get at, you know? So I'll have to like think about, I'll have to figure it out. But that was a pretty clear. It was like, what are you using to cut those grooves in the middle to help your fold? And I was like, oh, it's a linoleum cutting V, yeah. Which to his like defense, those tools, leather cutting tools and the linoleum cutting tools are really similar looking. Yeah. Like they have the little handles. They all fit, like they're all really similar size.
I imagine they're probably the same tools. They're exactly. Just marketed to cut different things.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I have exclusively used linoleum cutting tools for leather and recently bought some other tools and they work the same.
Yeah.
Flex cut tools are going to cut linoleum. Then they're going to cut.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's, you know, linoleum is the material is relatively soft and you can cut through it. It's like a stiff rubber or something, you know, whatever it is, but which is kind of close to a regular veg tan leather. It has kind of the same resistance. Yeah. So you can cut it the same way.
Stamp material for people that are unfamiliar, like those rubber stamps that you have. That's basically what it is.
Yeah. Right. Hey, that's good. I like that. Yeah. And so I actually like looked it up on Amazon. I was like, yeah, you can find them for relatively inexpensive because they come with the company that sells most of them is Speedball, which is just a company that sells ink and tools specifically for printing, like block printing and linoleum printing. And you can find the handle comes with a little with the tools that actually fit inside. So you can get five or six different cutting tools and it's like $12 or $16 or something.
That's what
like,
I stole from Kate to use for my leather.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Turns out she took a printing class at Micah after she started working there again.
I was like, where are all my tools?
No. She actually bought better tools. So now she doesn't care that I use the other one.
Nice. Where your tools are.
Every now and then I go to use like one of her nice ones. She's like, meh. I'm like, it's just one cut. I need it to be clean. Please let me use the better tools.
The sharp blades. She's like, go out and sharpen those blades. You know how to sharpen things. Well, what's upcoming on the channel? Anything?
We have the knife video that should hopefully come out sometime in the next 1 to 37 days, depending on how busy our people are.
Speaking of that knife real quick, I for Maker Camp, there's a maker swap that's going on. So I'm going to be making, if anybody's going to be there and you want to possibly get the thing that I'm contributing to the maker swap, I'm going to be making a combination marking knife / shop knife. So Sean was the recipient of the shop knife that I made, which was a file that has a blade on one side, and then on the spine of the blade it has inch and half inch and quarter inch marks marked into it, so you can use it as a ruler, like a quick 6-inch ruler or a blade, but I'm going to do that same thing, but a marking knife. So if you guys have seen our video, we made the marking knives. I made the marking knives out of file. So I'll be doing that, making a file marking knife / shop measuring knife. So I'm going to do that for the giveaway.
Do you know Fader's going to that too?
Yeah. Yeah, he'll be there with Modern Forge.
Yeah. He talked about it on the – I was listening to his interview of Jimmy DiResta today on the Full Blast podcast.
I'm so excited. The more I hear about it, like a lot of different podcasts have been talking about it, and I've heard a couple people reference it as like the Woodstock of maker conventions. I was like, that's gonna be so awesome.
It's been so long, like, yeah. And everybody that was gonna come this year, or maybe comes every other year or right, something yeah. like that, like everybody is coming this year. I'm super jealous you're going.
Yeah it was gonna be, so the first year was 2019. I was actually in New York during that weekend on 2019, but only passing through because my cousin was getting married in Ottawa up in Canada. So we like drove through, and I kind of half talked to my wife about possibly stopping in for like a few hours
let's
on the
just
way
hang
back.
Out just for yeah. a minute. Just think of it like a flea market.
Yeah, right. There's so many cool people there. And there were, but I think it was like 150 people. So that's like nothing for a convention, you know? That's super intimate, which is really nice. And then last year,
2020 got canceled. Virtual.
Right, yeah.
And
right.
you and I both were watching like from home
yeah.
on our phones on
like
Instagram.
In. Yeah, exactly, right. So that was really, it was cool. And then this year I went to the Timber Inn with like Justin Dietrich, who led mm-hmm. it up at the Blackthorn Resort. So that's going to be really cool to like go back and help him erect the thing and then be participating in the maker knife. But the reason why I was saying that is because I think the knife that you're making is kind of that similar type of thing yeah. where it's like a single piece of steel, you know, it's kind of like a blacksmith knife rather than like a handled, you know, yeah. scales knife and all, which is awesome. They're fun to make.
It was a ton of fun. I actually made a couple of them because I didn't know what I was doing. Like I was trying out several right. things for the first time.
Which is good. I rarely do that on my channel. It's like I just make it and then end up having to like spend a ton of time figuring out what I'm doing yeah. during the filming.
Well, it just so happened that like I had a piece of 1/4-inch 1084 mm-hmm. that was sitting around, and I went to go lay out my knife on it after the design was determined, and turned out like if I swapped it around the other direction, I could fit two on the same piece of steel.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, that's perfect. So I'll make two of them,
right?
And
yeah.
I get to practice. The first one came out better than the one that we did on film.
Of course it did.
Yeah. The one that we did on film suffered from the knife maker's curse of, you know, we don't make mistakes, we just make smaller knives.
Yeah. Nice.
It's probably, I wouldn't say it's 1/4 inch, but it's a hair under that shorter than what it was intended right. to be. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. New processes, new techniques that I'd never done before. So
right.
That's awesome. First time playing with acid and
yeah.
and cold hammering some steel.
That's cool. And I think you got the Bill Behnke file guide, right?
That was It was also my first time using my Bill Behnke file guide.
Yeah, that's so nice. It's amazing how you can like mitigate the errors that you make on plunge lines with a file guide so easily, and whatever it is, the $80 or whatever it costs, which seems like a lot for this little thing, but when you, as a knife maker, it's funny because I think our goals as knife makers is to try to make a knife that like looks as clean as possible, that it like looks like a production knife, but it's still a handmade knife. Mm-hmm. So, but there's like a level of craftsmanship and pride that you get in when you can get like a perfect, you know, like plunge lines that are perfect. Yeah. And you get this like perfect little arrow that points with like a blade, you know, your edge is right down the middle. And like being able to get that and using a tool like a Bill Behnke file guide it makes it so much easier, but also so satisfying to get like a really clean plunge line that are perfect on both sides. It's like 100% worth it.
Well, and I had been fairly lucky as a, and I have admittedly made far fewer knives than Dustin has. I've been fairly lucky where like when I get done, I look down, I'm like, oh, my plunge lines look really good. Like I'm really happy with this. And like, I don't have a bunch of knives sitting in a box that got screwed up. I have one knife sitting in that box now that that will never be finished. Never be finished. But yeah, no, the file guide was a fantastic addition. It just it took all the guesswork out of it, and all the like, it just made it a far less meticulous process to get those things even. And I'm also just like, we have ceramic shredder belts,
right?
And I'm still amazed that like something that can eat away at hardened steel like it's nothing doesn't even touch the ceramic plates on the file.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm even looking at it as I'm grinding, and I'm like,
right,
there's no marks on this. Oh, there's a nope, that's a string from the belt.
Yeah, carbide is amazing. I wish I could get like a whole set of carbide drill bits, but they're just so expensive. It's crazy. Did you order from Bill Behnke directly for the file guide?
Yep.
So cool. Did you have to like send him like an email or whatever? It was like, you had to do...
I sent him an email and then he sent me an invoice and then I paid the invoice.
Yeah, how awesome was that? It was like all super old school. I love it. Yeah. And actually, when I got mine, I was like grinding on my first or second knife and one of the pieces of carbide popped off.
Right.
And so I just sent him an email back and I was like, hey, this happened. And he was like, yeah, that should never happen. Just... send it back. So I like send it back, and actually I put it in the mail, and I think like 2 days later a new one showed up.
Yeah,
so he had already just like
he just
sent
shipped
a new
it out.
One out.
He was like, customer service,
right? Exactly.
It's
so
amazing what customer service does.
Yeah, right.
Because like Bill Behnke file guides are sold, like Alex Steele's website carries them.
Yeah, right.
And I checked his website because I like Alex Steele.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's more than ordering directly from Bill Behnke.
Right,
or he was sold out of the one I wanted, or something like that. Like, I didn't need the 4.5-inch one with the cutout for for a sword. Sword. I'm saying sword like my son does. Swandwich.
Sword. S words.
Nice. Those darn SW words. I didn't need the one with the cutout for the sword because that's not happening for years at this point.
Right. Yeah. Swords.
Swords.
Awesome.
Swords are great.
We have the next video we're going to shoot for Art of Craftsmanship is a secret video that we can't talk about right now on the podcast. But we're in the middle of, so we just filmed, we talked about last week, we filmed the projector box, which we built that, and that's, that will be coming out sometime, maybe this weekend. We reached out to the company that sent us the projector and they wanted to see it, which is fine because it was a pretty expensive piece of gear that they sent to us. We didn't have like, it's not like an official sponsorship, but again, that piece of gear is pretty expensive. So we were happy to like comply and work with them in a way that they could see what we're going to do and kind of, you know, see what how we wanted to present it. So Devin and I we still have to take shots, like the thumbnail shots. So we're going to do that tomorrow night. We were thinking like we need like a smoke machine or something because you know, using a projector, you can't really see the light unless there's some type of atmosphere, and that's what a cool shot is. Like you get like the light shining through the projection. So, Devin was like, I don't know if we can get like a smoke machine, or if we can do something. And then he texted me today or sent me a message today, and he was like, can we come over tomorrow night? He's like, our dad. He was like, Dad just reminded me that we could just burn leaves, like just have a fire and burn leaves, and we'll get lots of smoke. So he'll be over tomorrow night. So we'll take in the thumbnails for that. So that should probably come out this weekend. And then we're working on the magic toy box that we had to kind of put that on hold because we had to get the projector video out. And then we have the next video we're going to work on, which we have a deadline for as well. So that'll come out. And then, I don't know. I feel like I want to do another axe video, maybe another axe restoration. I also have a cool little like ball peen hammer that would make a nice blacksmithing hammer that I think would make an interesting video just to like restore that because I do that often.
That a while ago.
Yeah. And then we haven't really done much of that type of thing, but I think there are enough like cheap hammerheads out there that people find. If they want to get into blacksmithing, you can find a cheap hammerhead and then do minimal amount of work to restore it to a point where it will make a really nice hammerhead for blacksmithing. So I think that might be kind of a fun video. So we kind of got that on the docket, and then I have a bunch of other stuff that I've drawn up and stuff. So
yeah, I mean, I've got I hear you. Like, the list is long.
Yeah.
I was hoping some magic switch would flip when I partnered with a videographer, and it'd be like one video a week. Yeah. Yeah. No. It turns out life still happens.
Right. Exactly. Then you have two people living life.
Yeah. Although, I'll be honest, even if I'm putting out videos at the same rate I was before, I don't have to edit anymore. I can't tell you how much joy that brings. I got myself a Devin.
We all need a Devin.
And I like the human that's behind the Devin, Neil. I like him.
Yeah. Right.
I enjoy spending time with him. He's easy to be around. But yeah, it's anyways, long list of stuff. I think the next thing we're filming is, I talked about the welding part of it, but I'm going to weld together a firewood holder for both my fire pit to keep wood off the ground, as well as our Airbnb's fire pit to keep wood off the ground. Right now, we just have a pile of wood next to the fire pit, and the bottom row always rots if it's not used quick enough.
Are you gonna do like a rounded thing, or is it gonna
absolutely
be
not?
No.
We had so my tiny
you don't
house.
Wanna, like, put in your long skinny sticks into your forge and hammer them into a long rounded thing.
No, there's actually very few. Like, it's mostly the tube steel.
Right.
My tiny house had a portable dog fence that came with it that could detach and then hung on the front of the house, and that was made out of 1-inch square steel, hollow square steel, and then 3/8 inch. Round bar, right? The bars. We're never going to use that fence again, so right. I've just been cutting that apart to use for steel for random purposes.
Yeah, and they're like 4.5 feet or something.
Fence section was, I think, like 6 feet long and about 5 feet tall.
Right.
There's plenty of steel around. The fire pit will be. It's just going to be a square fire pit.
Right. Okay. Wood holder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, wood holder, not fire pit. Thank you. Yeah, so I just, where the bars came off of, it's got little pokey things that stick up. I figured instead of grinding those out, I'll use those to keep wood in place from rolling around.
Okay.
So those would be the bottom, and then vertical pieces are also square steel, and then support pieces, like the 15-inch deep that it is, will be the round bars.
Nice.
And I'll just weld that in. And then the plan was to, out of wood, build like a removable, like just a place on top roof system.
Okay.
To keep the stuff dry. Yeah. Right. I found a pile of shingles in the shed that haven't been used in a decade. So as long as they don't fall apart, I'll just throw them up there over top some OSB and call it a day.
That's cool. I like it. That's a cool design. Like, I haven't, for like something small, obviously there's covered firewood holders, you see them all the time, but like having a little firewood holder that goes next to either a fireplace or a fire pit that has a cover on it, that sounds like a cool design.
Yeah.
And it's something I think that, as far as like content creators go, we're always looking to like broaden the audience, you know, like a lot of people might look for something like that, you know, like not just knife makers looking for knife making things, or axe people, or, you know, bushcraft people, or four wheeler people, you know, like, that's something that a lot of people have. They're like, oh, I wonder if I could make my own, you know, firewood holder, because we all have that mindset. You either buy it or you make it. That's the maker switch.
Yeah.
Which
I like that term. I like that term from Devin, the maker switch.
I know. And it was like, and I like, he was like, all right, well, if you had the maker switch, what would be the up, you know, what would be the on and what would be the off? And he had the idea of like, make it, buy it, which is just perfect. Yeah. So, again, if you're going to Maker Camp, we're going to be getting stickers made, and we're going to have the Maker Switch as a sticker.
Nice.
It's gonna be awesome. So I was actually playing with it today. I was kind of doing some designs and getting it.
I'm going to steal one of those before you go to Maker Camp.
You got to, because otherwise they're all going to be gone. Because I'm sure, like, they're just going to be gone. But yeah, so we'll have the Maker Switch.
That's cool.
Which I think is fun. Yeah. So I did the design for that.
That's very cool. I'm excited to see your designs. That's one thing I am envious of Dustin on, is that because he's gone to art school and I never did, I'm an engineer. I can draw straight lines really well. No, I'm always envious of Dustin's design skills and the way he's able to lay stuff out. Like, he mentioned on the last podcast, the design of the drawing of the sling for the axe made for Corinne.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, that's a fantastic drawing. And even if I tried to do it, like tried to copy it, it wouldn't like I could trace the image and it wouldn't look that good.
Yeah. I love that type of like technical drawing where I'm, you know, it's a combination of the ability to like see and draw and have the picture in my mind and translate it, but also then do it in a way that is information that you can transfer to either yourself or to someone else, right? Do it to scale. So someone could take your design and measure it and use it. Like that specificity I really enjoy in like drafting.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like creating artwork, just doing a landscape painting, which if I'm doing a landscape painting, then I'm making all sorts of like creative choices that might not be in the landscape, but are better for the painting. But when I'm doing like a drafting, I'm like, I like the idea of being super specific. You know, it's like to the inch, to the like, you know, 32nd of an inch, and making sure everything is measurable. And yeah, that's fun. And also I use that type of drawing to, like I was saying, to kind of flesh out the ideas. Like, how do I figure out this problem? Well, I can't see it in my head as well, or I can kind of see it, but I need to see it. I need to draw it. I need to like flesh it out so that way I can work through how this thing might work.
So for those of you that don't know, Dustin and I have been friends forever. Like, my wife and I fought over whose wedding party he was going to be in. My wife won. And so I have lots of Dustin's artwork in my house. And specifically, he did a fairly big, it's what, 24 by 36? Fairly big charcoal
drawing. Yeah, that's probably
charcoal drawing for us. And he mentioned that he likes to take some liberties with nature to make the image look better. And I get an odd sense of joy because there's a particular tree in that he added from whatever he was looking at. And he told us about it. And he often, at this point, like, our relationship is what it is, where he tells me when he's added something or changed something from what was actually in nature. And I get an odd sense of joy out of knowing what he has changed. And so, like, that image hangs in our bedroom, so I see it multiple times a day. I'm like, oh, and I always, for whatever reason, and I don't know, I don't think I've ever told you this, I always look at the tree that got added to it, and I'm like, oh, that tree was added with love. All the rest of it was already there. That tree just made everything better.
That's great. I like that. I'm added for love with love. It's like this image needs a little love. Like, this little corner isn't doing what it needs to do in nature, so I'll just put some more nature in there to do what I want it to do. I've multiple times throughout my relationship with my wife, we've sat down and worked together because we're both artists. So we'll like sit down and draw something or paint something together. You know, she doesn't often do landscape, but when, you know, occasionally she will. And she will, in those circumstances, she's really true to what's there in front of her. And I'll be sitting right next to her and basically painting or drawing the same thing. And it's like, it looks basically the same, but I've taken liberties. And that's just my experience as a landscape painter. You know, I'm always balancing what I see with what makes a good image, you know, like what, as far as compositionally, what needs to happen within the painting or within the drawing. So she'll be like, what are you doing? Like, that bush isn't there. Or like, there, you took out the fence. And I'm like, well, it just didn't make a good image. You know, it's like,
I didn't like a fence.
Right. Exactly. I've always liked doing that with landscapes and stuff. It's like just editing a little bit, you know, like, I use nature as the inspiration to make the painting, but it's not, I'm not taking a photograph, you know, it's not a photographic image. It's a painting.
That's the big difference. It's like, so if you've been listening, I know Dustin and Nicole through my wife, Kate, who's a Micah grad, and she did photography. And that's a huge difference. Like, when I talk to you about your artistic process and how you make, and that's probably why I really like the trees you add, is that that's something she doesn't really get an opportunity to do. Like, yeah, in post-production she could do stuff, but that's not her style, really. And so it's a significant difference between the conversations I have with my wife, and she's taught me tons about, you know, framing photos and making sure I get a good shot. And even now I'm like, I don't know how to shoot this well. Can you shoot this better?
Right.
And she's like, sure. I'm like, thanks, sweetie. So if you see good thumbnails on my YouTube channel, she took them. Bad thumbnails, I took them.
All right. Well, we are, let's see, we're at, nice.
Oh, man, it's been a while.
Hour and a half in, just under an hour and a half. Sean, do you have a recommendation for our listeners this week?
I do. Somebody I've been following for a while on Instagram. His name is One Wolf Leather. Let me make sure I get that right. One Wolf Leather. So all one word, One Wolf Leather. Spell out the word, one O N E. His name is Joe. he does axes and axe handles and leather work for those axe handles, and his leather work isn't excessively intricate, but it's really clean and really well done. I've always enjoyed his images and his shots, and I take a lot of inspiration from his sheaths when I'm designing some of my sheaths for the axes that I redo. But yeah, check him out, Joe at One Wolf Leather on nice. Instagram.
Awesome, thanks. Yeah, that's one of the things as a leather worker. I don't love working with leather. I love the fact that I can do it myself, right? I love, again, that just goes back to like wanting to be able to do all the stuff myself. I like the fact that I can buy leather and I can buy all the supplies and I can make it. And I can do them pretty well because I'm an artist and because I'm a perfectionist when it comes to creating something. I can do it pretty well. But when I see other people who can do leather and it's really clean, I guess that's the other thing. I can appreciate how much that takes because I've tried to do it.
Yeah.
And I put like time and effort and screwed up here and there. And I actually have far more screwed up leather sheaths than I have like knives, you know, because it's just like, I don't know. It's something about like, I enjoy doing it to an extent. You know, I like the fact that I can do it and I like leather as opposed to other things. But it's not my favorite thing because you can kind of screw up a little bit. And I feel like you see those screw ups. And I guess that's another one of those things that the more you get into it, you can get better tools, and the better tools for leather really can help to make your work really clean. So I've checked out his stuff and it is really clean and done well. Like there's an art to that, to do leather really cleanly.
That's what I was going to say is like being able to keep your work that clean is experience based. Like you've done it, you've put in the work, you've done it hundreds, thousands of times, and that's your result. Like, I have spent as much time as I can on something, and it still comes out looking like somebody, like, you know, like it's still better than the guy that's not doing anything, but it's not great.
It's functional, right? Yeah. And there's a level of functionality too. Like that's the other thing. Sometimes if I mess up on leather, if it's not like, if you know, the stitching isn't perfectly aligned or whatever, I'm like, well, it's a tool, you know, like, but that's like the presentation side of the tool.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, but
and it sucks to spend that much time on like the knife that's going into it.
Right.
Like all the time you spend finishing that and then you just make a mistake on the leather. You're like,
Yeah, right. Exactly. I just needed like just the leather. It's just the end thing. Right. And then you like screw it up and yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you bought that leather sewing machine, which I don't think you've used yet for a sheath.
I haven't.
After you got that one, I like asked my parents for one for Christmas, and so that's what they got me for Christmas. Nice. And I've spent more time with it than you have.
Yeah.
But it's still a struggle. Like the most recent thing I did came out pretty good. But it was still like I was fighting it a lot, and I want it to be an easier process.
Yeah. Yeah, that Chinese sewing machine I think has like potential if you can like get one that is made relatively well and also then like wade through all of the like the shit that you have to deal with to like either figure it out yourself to get to an end result where you have, you know, you've come up with the right, you know, thread strength and needle size and speed of like cut, and you've modified the foot so it doesn't fuck up the surface of your leather, and
I sanded all that back off and it fucked up my surface of my leather again. I'm like, damn it.
So there's a lot of like stuff on YouTube about those because they are potentially a really awesome tool for a really cheap price. But you got to put the effort into it. But the effort that it takes to hand stitch leather sheaths is more than what most people want. So like that's what draws us into this machine that could possibly do it for you. So a small company reached out to me, and they have a kit that you can add on to the Chinese leather sewing machines that can like help you out and like helps to make them better. So they're actually sent a product that can add on to that leather sewing machine that I haven't really had a chance to get into it. And I want to do them justice because they sent me this thing out of like the kindness of their heart. So I want to be able to do like a video on it and stuff. So I'm waiting to do it, but that has the potential of making it like that much better. So we'll see.
Yeah, let me know how that goes. Yeah. Cause
yeah.
I keep changing stuff on mine to try to make it function a little smoother.
All right. Yeah. So speaking of leather, I actually also have a leather worker to recommend this week. So my recommendation is JC Messer. He's an awesome leather worker. He's actually, I think JC is also part of Whiskey River's, I forget what he calls it. It's like their trading company, the Whiskey River Trading Company, mm-hmm. where they have a bunch of different makers and people from around the country who contribute to basically, you know, they'll have like a knife maker and a leather worker and whatever else. They'll have a bunch of people work together on projects and then they can sell those things. So they all make money based off of what they're working on. And then, you know, and then Brandon from Whiskey River sells them on his website or the forum, whatever it is. So JC Messer is one of the guys who does leather work for him. And his Instagram is Messer Custom Leather, Messer Custom Leather on Instagram. And JC is just a really awesome dude. He, I've been following his work for a long time and just happened to catch him and Brandon Roost. They had like a Instagram live thing 6 months ago or 8 months ago. And I popped on and saw him and it was cool because at the time, and I may have mentioned this on the podcast, but he reached out to me afterward cause I was in their Instagram live video and I was kind of chatting with some of the other people in the comment section. And then afterward I had a few different people reach out to me and say that they like really liked the podcast, you know, JC including that. So it was kind of cool to know that there were people in the community that were listening,
right.
Whether or not we have tons of listens every week or not, we know that there are some quality people listening and people that, you know, we're interested in. I've been interested in his work for a long time, so it was really kind of, you know, it was humbling and interesting at the same time. Yeah. Like, oh cool, these people listen to my podcast, like who knows, you know. We're just, I still feel like, you know, we're not in the very beginning stages of YouTube, but we're still in the kind of early stages of the possibilities of how like the potential of what YouTube could do, and our podcast is obviously is a lot, you know, younger in general, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm behind all of you for all of that. And I have a lot of fun here on the podcast. I had a fun, you know, I had a ton of fun a year ago. Nice. And would love to get a podcast going.
Right.
You know, like I can sit here and talk to you forever about tools, about shop, about anything. Like it's just easy to just flow and go through stuff. And I actually think my videographer, Neil, cause I actually do a lot of my stuff off of you guys. Right. I'm like, I like this channel. He's an introvert and like really introverted, but he can put on, like he can turn it on really well. And I mentioned it to him a couple of times. I was like, I feel like if we did a podcast together, you'd be the star of the podcast and I would just sit back and like be the second voice that comes in. And he chuckled about that whole thing. I was like, yeah. But yeah, you know, at this point, we're just trying to find a rhythm on the filming part of things.
Right. Yeah, gotta get there first. Yeah. Well, it's a blast, and you reached out to me, was that a couple weeks ago when I like at last minute did the podcast by myself, and you were like, if you ever need someone to do a podcast with you, I'm here. You know, like especially having like two young kids, and we almost always record relatively late at night, right. You know, 8:30 or 9. Like your kids are asleep, and yep. So Devin sent me a message, and we're actually supposed to have our cousin on this week. But Devin, the reason why he's not on this week is that he works the Orioles and they have a game tonight, which he actually thought was a day game, but ended up being a night game, and they have a concert afterwards. So like last week we did record after an Orioles game. I think we ended up starting at like 11 o'clock.
Night.
Yeah. So he was like, you know, I'm doing the game and then there's a concert, so I'm going to be home really late. So I was like contemplated doing the podcast with my cousin Jesse, who's going to be on with us, but then I reached out to him and I was like, we could do it just the two of us, but the fun part is like because he's family,
right.
I wanted it to be the three of us, you know, like it's the two of us with our cousin. So, and he agreed, so we're going to postpone, which is fine. And we have some other guests coming up on the podcast, which will be fun too, but yeah, this is fun. It's always fun to talk to you, and you're always welcome to join us. So
I was super excited. I usually get a day every week with Dustin, no matter what, because we sail together on Wednesdays.
Yep.
And Dustin had back to school night last night for sailing. And so So, somehow, every time Dustin has back to school night, which is the only time he ever misses sailing,
right?
We always have really high winds, and I'm always doing Dustin's job when he's gone.
And I swear, like, grinding in the pit.
My hands still hurt today, which means I need to lift more heavy things more often because, gosh darn it.
Yeah, you guys had some pretty good wind that
night. Oh, man. We were pushing it. Yeah. Like, my watch had us going 9-1 or 9-4. Nice. And we definitely saw like 8-5, 8-plus, 8-5 plus on the GPS. But yeah, we were hauling last night.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate to miss out. We only have a few more races in the season. I hate to miss out, but, you know, such is life. And actually, this week, so my school has a middle school and a high school, and the middle school back-to-school night was on Tuesday, and the high school back-to-school night was on Wednesday. I was like, you couldn't be switched. Now, I sail on both nights, Tuesday and Wednesday, so I still got to sail on Tuesday. But if I had to choose between the two, right, we sail on Wednesdays on our boat. That's the boat that I own with my brother and our friend, and that's the one Sean sails with us. And then on Tuesday nights, I sail with a crew that I've been sailing with for a few years, but not like the boat I've been sailing on since high school, you know, or not the boat, but the team. So,
right.
Like, if I had to choose between the two, I'd obviously go with the boat that I own. But, you know, I got to miss occasionally. But
well, we got the gun without you.
Yeah, nice.
That was a fun
there
night.
There you go. Nice.
Fun night.
So you did a well enough job, whether or not you... whether your arms are sore or not.
It's not my arms. It's just my hands.
It's your hands.
My fingers.
Yeah, it's the constant gripping. Yeah.
And well, there wasn't, like, the wind was so heavy, we weren't adjusting much upwind.
Yeah.
It was basically like tuck it in and lock it down.
Yeah, right.
Because even like we had Tim come out again.
Yep.
And Tim was struggling on the winch. And I don't think I would have been any different or Charles would have been any different on the winch. Like, it was just so heavy.
It's
there was that much tension
wind.
In
yeah.
it.
Right.
That it was get it in as fast as possible and then just go as fast as possible.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fun. Well,
it's a good night.
Yeah. I'll be back next week. We've got a couple more weeks of sand, which will be awesome. And yeah. All right, guys. Well, that is it. Thank you so much, Sean, for joining us.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Always a pleasure. And we'll definitely have to have you back. Sean is our first repeating guest, which is awesome. And this technically is the third time you recorded with us because everyone knows the last time we had two to get one, which was fine. But so you're definitely always welcome back. This is fun. It's great. You know, the nice thing, too, is that, you know, as being a good friend of mine, you're familiar with like what's going on in our lives and all on the channel. And you're the first one who knows about what we're doing for the channel before maybe even Nicole. Like, she doesn't
care.
Like,
I warned you about those spring hinges on the toy box. I'm like, I don't think those are weighted for, you know, anything.
Right. Yeah. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Please make sure you, go over and follow Sean on Instagram at Crafting a Life I Want and go check him out on YouTube. He has hit 1,000 subscribers, so he can make some money now. So go watch some more videos. Don't skip those ads. I always tell people to skip my ads because it doesn't really make a difference. We're making like percentages of a penny for each video for each person who watches. But if everyone watches the ads, then you make a lot of money. So go subscribe to Sean and leave him some comments. All that stuff makes a difference for our channel. And go over and check us out on Instagram. You can follow myself, The Art of Craftsmanship, and then also Devin at The Art of Camera Guy. You know, I'll be both at Maker Camp this year. So everyone go and check out Maker Camp. And if you're not there, then he and I will be shooting a video while we are there. So you'll be able to get some fun in-person, fun questions. We're going to ask some people some fun stuff. So you can check that out. And if you guys want to support what we do for The Art of Craftsmanship, go check us out on Patreon. The Art of Craftsmanship at Patreon. Patreon.com/The Art of Craftsmanship. And same thing with Sean. You can do the same thing if you want to. If you are a fan of Sean's work over at the Crafting Life I Want, go check him out. And you can go and support him as well. So, Sean, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Dustin.
Everybody else, we will talk to you guys next time.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.